Okay, let's call this board meeting together on April 16th here in the Overton office. We've asked Pastor Ham to come and give us an opening prayer, and we'll follow that by the pledge.
Before I go through the Heavenly Father, I need to make an apology for being late. I wish I could say this is the first time ever in my history, but it's not. Especially when I live right across. And I actually was driving towards the old in Overdale.
Oh.
So my mind's kind of like. So with that said, to calm myself and to put things in perspective, I seek the Holy Father. Father, I thank you. I thank you for this time and this place, and Lord, I pray that this prayer be not just a prayer, a formality, a prayer that everyone has heard before, but it be a prayer that's sincere, a prayer that's addressed to you, recognizing who you are, and recognizing why we are here. And Lord, I thank you that this organization has initiated and asking me to come and pray. And Lord, that does my heart good. Simply because it recognizes, this place recognizes that there is a power that is beyond the power that we provide in this valley. That there is a power that is everlasting. That there is a power when there is a shortage, when there is a storm, when there are things that disrupt our lives because the power, the electricity that we are so dependent on, we long for it, but we don't have it. And Lord, we thank you that we have this place, this facility that provides that kind of power for our homes, that makes our lives comfortable, makes our lives pleasurable, convenient. But Lord, we recognize that there is a power that is beyond. That is beyond electricity, as we call it. Something that we can harness. And so, Lord, we pray because we are harnessing the ultimate power. And that's you. And we address you as our Father, simply because we recognize that you desire a relationship with us as well as if we are, because we are sons and daughters. And that's why we can call you our Heavenly Father. So Lord, bless this meeting, bless this time, bless these people, as they are the ones that provide the electricity, the power that makes our lives comfortable and convenient. But Lord, we pray also that you will bless the people here with the power, the internal power, the power that created all things, that kind of power. Bless them. Bless this meeting, that we, the people, will be blessed in this valley by and through the decisions that they make. And Lord, even when there's a power outage, even when the person who prays today happens to be late only because we, as humans, tend to be like that. And the power that is provided through this facility harnessing the power. Even that can break down. But you never break down. And that is why we pray your blessing on these people and the work that they do, so that perhaps when people experience the television that they watch, it comes through the electricity. The electricity that this facility provides, this people provide, that all of that will remind us that there is a power that will not break, and that power will sustain these people and bless these people in this facility with your power, your divine grace, and your goodness that will keep us calm and comfortable and at peace even when there is stress. So thank you. Thank you, Lord Jesus. We pray. Bless this meeting, Lord. In your name, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate you doing that.
Thank you. Thank you for your invitation. And thank you for bearing with me and being patient with me. Okay.
Miss Melissa teaches us that. So if you'd stand at this time, place the flag, we'll do the pledge. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Lisa. I think that's a nice touch. So at this time, is there any public comment?
There's no one on the seat side.
How about a motion for the acceptance of the agenda?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda for March 19th. Or this night, for today's agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The previous meeting, Rich, here we go.
I was reading the wrong one.
March, for March 19th, we have a motion to approve the previous minutes.
You're up, Rich.
And that's the last one. I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the March 19th meeting.
Okay, second?
I'll second.
Okay, we got a motion to second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. On chair report, we've got a little note here from one of the citizens up in Moapa thanking the linemen that they're doing wonderful work keeping the lines and the brush growth down. It makes us feel safer. So there you go, Mr. Levitt.
We'll keep it up.
Keep up the good work. Did OPD have any project at the fair this year? Mm-hmm. Was they doing anything like last year? Had the old trailer over there doing the routine, right?
We think we're probably going to do that every other year.
Oh, every it's other?
A, uh-huh. And then the off years from the fair, we'll do something in Mesquite.
Oh, very good. Okay, our attorney's report.
I don't have anything, Mr. Chairman, unless anyone has any questions for me.
Okay, let's go to line operations.
Okay.
So first up, with my line operations report, we're going to discuss our safety that we did for the last
2 months. Last month I wasn't here. I was at NREA Best Practices. Thank you all for letting me attend that with my team. So I'll report today on both the last 2 months of stats. On the right, you can see we had a pole-top rescue. This was just last week. That's why the event is outside. This was our safety meeting. That was what we did in April. We had 52 attendees. And then back in March, we had enclosed and confined space training as well as vault rescue training with 54 attendees. So fairly good attendance at both events. Pole-top rescue, you see there on that picture, we had a lot of office staff that were able to attend, and it was incredible. That's the one where the linemen and substation departments go and certify whether it's pole-top rescue or bucket rescue, but the office personnel were able to attend and get a view of the risk that we do out there in the fields and what we're trained for to mitigate when we have to rescue somebody. This little presentation on the best practices event that we had last month. That's where I was attending when I missed board meeting. It was a great show. Carolyn's last event that she put on for us. There was 92 attendees to that event, so it was a very good event there at the Aliante, same place we had annual meetings. Good discussions overall. There's safety, mental health, tools of the trades. We had Milwaukee, like the Milwaukee Tools. They have a large line of utility-specific tools. They were there. Some very good motivational speakers. One rodeo kid, young man that had gotten injured, back injury, but just spoke to the group on overcoming those hardships in your life and persevering. It was incredible. That was such a great speech. Outage reports. This one's first one up is February. We had 8 planned outages and 1 unplanned outage. The 1 unplanned outage you'll see there about mid-screen on that, it says poles damaged by fire. February 13th was the first time we had rain in almost 200 days. And so with that rainstorm, it creates pole fires. All that dust and the contaminants settle on top of those poles and across those insulators, and you get a nice little drizzle that comes through town that causes pole fires. We skipped by with only 1 pole fire during that. Right over there by Arnie Collins' house, and so it was pretty minimal. The teams worked on it for a few hours, but had power back on very quick. March, we had 4 planned outages and 3 unplanned outages. The big one to note on the unplanned outages in March was the conductor failure. Wire overhead wire failure. That was Echo Bay. We had a conductor fail down there, so it's in an area that's tough to access, but honestly, once you go all the way around to Echo Bay and then find the outage, you have to go back through the middle of that and fix the problem. So it took a couple hours to get it repaired, but the teams did really good, honestly, for as much distance they had to travel on that. Service installations, on the left we have February. Canyon Crest, Dinosaur seemed to have the majority for both months. Mesquite, we had 1 commercial in February. And then Pulsifer had 4 residential. On the right is March. Canyon Crest and Dinosaur had the majority. 2 commercial in Dinosaur and 4 in Falcon there. So that's a little bit new. And then 1 lowly hookup here in Walk Valley for the last 2 months there at Whipple Substation. And this shows by the year to date. And in comparison for 24, 23, quite honestly, we're quite a ways behind 24, looking at that standard. But for the January, February, March, just pretty equal every month, low 30s. And then this is on that new bucket truck out front. Dinger had to trip over to get in. We took receipt on this just a few weeks ago. We've had this on order for, I think the first invoice we got for this truck was back in January of 2022. Later that year, we put it in contract, and then we took receipt on it just a couple weeks ago. So almost 3 years. It's the same model that we have already in service, both here in Overton as well as in Mesquite. It's just a new model of that. It makes a third exact model of that, but it's interesting. Bottom left corner, you can see and monitor those costs as they keep going up on the exact same truck. It's little bit disheartening, but you get to see the specialized equipment and what it takes to keep the power rolling. So.
Was it better than the old one?
Honestly, the boom itself, I mean, it's going to be better, yeah, because it's new technology, but the boom itself, the functioning and the height and all that is literally the same boom. Yeah, yeah. It's on a new, it's on a different chassis. It's on a Freightliner chassis, which is far better. The ones there, the, I can't think of what, Internationals, and they've been good trucks, but they've definitely had their faults over time. For the jobs the crews have been working on, Mesquite continues on with the First South and Thistle, that underground wire upgrade over there. It's a lot of work that been going into that. I would say that they're probably a third to a halfway through that project. They continually work on that and making good progress on that. Hardening our system there. And then I report on this one, I think, the last month or last 2 months, but this is the line that they're retiring between the Mesa on the east side down to Gila's substation, getting it out of the way so we can build that new 138 line going through there. Our team's wrecked out that, retired that line, and since these pictures have been taken, it's been retired for a few weeks, cleaned up, totally cleaned up, and is ready for those contractors whenever they're ready to go through there and start building that new line.
So what are they, put underground all through that area?
It's going to be underbuilt.
Oh, just underbuilt?
Yeah,
on the new line.
But the poles are going in the same location, or in fact, you can see a flag right there on that one by that down guy that shows that it's in the same location, so.
Do you reuse the wire when you retire a line, or?
It's being upgraded, so no. We can, if the wire, it is wire that we could reuse if we needed to, but we already have a surplus of it and it's done its time, so we scrapped it, retired it. Any questions, any comments? Okay. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Okay, next up, Randall for engineering.
All right here. Okay, let's see. The project, our Tortoise to Gila 138 line, has the contractor starting foundations this week, and they also had crews out on the staging area sites pulling poles together. Most of the duct poles, because of the length, are in two pieces. They can't travel on trucks because they're so long. So they had to jack most of these poles together, and that's what these guys are working on right now, taking poles. We, on the long drive switch yard, we have the contractor working on long drive and Raptor at the same time. They're doing cable tray. When we talk about cable tray, that is those pieces right there. They're upside down now. They'll go in the ground, and that's where all of our control wire runs throughout the switch yard back to the control building. And they're also installing all the conduit to our equipment at this time, and then we're working on ground grid. If you've been on near the Raptor or long drive, all of the poles are now been set for the 138 line, and they're getting ready to probably string in conductor the next couple weeks. They're framing them, finish up framing right now, next few weeks, and pulling conductor. And this is part of Raptor, just showing the same progress. This actually shows a cable tray already installed. And they're in the same process of working on conduit and ground grid. The large load application to NV Energy has been submitted, our first draft. We're hoping to hear back from them within a week or so to see what else they're going to require for the capacity studies that they're going to do for us. We hope to know, they're saying it's a year now for the studies, for them to complete them. So we'll have to see how that goes. We have a retirement in our department. Beattie Long's going to be retiring in a few months, and we flew her job 2 or 3 weeks ago and interviewed 6 individuals. We offered the job to a Josh Loeb from Mesquite, and he is accepted, and we're still working out the details for that job. And he'll start the first part of May. And he'll be an engineering tech, and eventually in a few years, he'll become a staking engineer. And that's all I have to report. If you have any questions.
Did we get all the insulators for the line?
Yes, all the insulators came in.
Thank you, Randall. Kevin with sub-ops.
So this is our busy season for the operations department because it's the one time a year where we can de-energize equipment and do a lot of project maintenance and stuff like that on it. So that's what most of these slides are, is of projects we've been doing. We've also commandeered John Garcia for a while. We've had him for a little while. We've been doing painting, and that's why we've been doing a lot of painting, is because John's our painter. So this is Pulsifer Substation, so we've got a fresh coat of paint on the building. And then we've got the two transformers in there, the perches for the insular, the arresters. Yeah, there you go, thank you. The perches for the arresters, there's almost no paint left on top of them, and they made a mess of those transformers. This is what they look like on the bottom side. And so our guys, and then the paint is getting pretty thin. You can see the primer behind them. And so we've got John and the sub crew working on this transformer. This the picture on the left is the transformer before they started. And the picture on the right is, I think it's a primer coat, but it could be a final coat of that paint. But that was as of 11 o'clock this afternoon, the one on the right. So it's quite a bit of difference. Another angle. On the left there, they're still prepping and sanding and getting everything ready, and then on the right is that coat of paint on that. So it makes a big difference, makes them look fresh, new again, and then we get rid of that rusting problem we have. So while that transformer is de-energized, they also run tests and maintenance on all the equipment all down that line. And the reclosers tested good on this bay. We didn't have a problem with them. Regulators also tested good, but they ran a bank of tests on each regulator. So there's three regulators in this bay, and each regulator takes about 2 hours to test. And it's because there's 32 taps. Each tap, they have to run that test on all 32 taps all the way across that regulator. It takes quite a bit of time. So it's an all-day project for just testing a bank of regulators for them. But they did it, gave us a thumbs up on the regulators, so they tested good. And then they go through and they process all the oil on the regulators too, because there's a lot of, each time they arc, there's a lot of stuff that comes off of that arcing. So they process that oil and filter it all out, so it gives them a fresh new oil inside there. So this bay is expected to be back in service next week and ready for the summer load. At Whipple Substation, you notice the towers are nice and pretty now. I reported a month or two ago that they were painting these towers, or started painting these towers. They're finished painting the towers. They did basically the same thing here. They had de-energized that whole, each bay, and they went through and they ran a bank of tests across every piece of equipment and filtered the oil and all that. They did have one recloser they've replaced already, and then one of the bushings on the transformer didn't pass one of the tests, and so they actually changed that bushing out today. I don't know if they actually finished and energized today, but that's what they were working on. Shane wanted to kind of give a report on the start and the finish of the test reports and kind of go through what it looked like before and what it looked like after and what it should be. So next month, hopefully, we'll get you some kind of presentation on that testing that they did and the report. This is, picture on the left is the old bushing coming out. Picture on the right is the new bushing coming down in. The reason we was able to change this out easily is because they have a draw lead style. And that cable goes up inside the center of that bushing as it goes down inside the transformer. And then on top, on the right-hand side, you can see that top piece is part of that stinger that goes up through there, and that's what connects onto the top. And they'll just pin that in until they get the nut and everything assembled. On the other style, like the low side, because it carries more current on the low side than it does on the high side, there would be a pad attached to that bottom threaded part on the bottom, and they would have to actually bring that cable that's inside the transformer and attach it while it's down inside. So you have to drain the oil down 3 or 4 feet in order to do that. So these are pretty easy to change out, and we change these out quite often, honestly. We've had a rash of leaky gaskets, and so we change them out when that happens. They also have a voltage regulator in that Whipple substation that sometimes they stop tapping. They stop regulating the voltage, and they tear it apart, and the motor drops. It kind of loosens. And so the procedure used to be is just to pull the screws out, clean it up real good, put the screws back in with some Loctite. Well, that didn't fix some of them. They slid towards, started tearing it apart, and found that the motor itself was dragging against the internal parts, and so they had to clean them up. So that's what they do, and they have one that does that. They'll pull all three of them down and look at that, and then put it back together, so hopefully it doesn't give us any problems for quite a while. So anyway, Whipple substation should be back up and online next week also with fresh coat of paint. Everything's been processed and tested, and it should be good for our summer load. This little oil filter press that we bought last year has been going nonstop. Usually when we do this kind of work, we have to borrow Lincoln County's press. It's nice to have our press so that we don't have to borrow theirs and the time frame to get it here, use it. This is their downtime too, so we have to schedule it back and forth. It's nice to have our own press that we don't have to worry about. If we have a problem, break out the press, drop down whatever we're working on, and then filter it out, push it back in. So, we've been working with a few engineering firms, and one of the firms that I've been working with is their name is Qualys. And this is Mesquite Substation. And what we're doing is the top bay, that's going to go away, and we're going to put 220 MVA transformers in that place and build this out as a 40 MVA substation. Rather, right now it's a 20 MVA. So we've been working with them. They've got us some pretty good, almost 30% drawings. We'll have those in a week or two to review, and we'll go from there. We'll keep working on these.
Kevin, will you eventually, that old lattice section will be taken out?
It will be, yep. Yeah. Oh, what happened?
It looked up.
I pushed a button I shouldn't have. what Rich is talking about is the bottom right corner. That lattice bus work is all going to go away. It's all going to be new construction in there. So, we've also been working with Mike Bryson from ECI, and they're the ones that are building the settings for the Raptor and Long Drive substations. They're also updating our Aspen model. Our Aspen model is what they look at when they want to do settings for the relays. That has basically everything that they need in order to make those settings coordinate. It's quite a bit of information that goes back and forth, and it's quite a process to get that done. So I've been working with them. That's the end of my presentation, unless you have questions for me. Oh, I did have one more thing. We had SEL training that we do it every year. It's a 2-day training that we host, and it's kind of unique because we ask the SEL engineers to teach us about stuff that we are interested in, and they come down and put on a class on topics that we give them. And so we had roughly 22 people attend this year. So it was quite successful. We got a lot of good information out of it. So anyway, that's my presentation.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, Scott, you're up for administrative services.
I mean, Lisa moved me down 4 on the list, and I don't know what that means. I'm going to go with that.
You're 4 on the list?
I'm the 4th. I've been number 1 for 5 years.
Oh, yes.
On the presentation order.
Got to keep getting your toes, man.
That's exactly what it is. All right, cybersecurity report for the month of April. Our cybersecurity training, we had 100% attendance. That's 60 out of the 60 employees attended that training. Some of the lessons were insider threats, software updates, social engineering. Our internal phishing results are looking really good so far this year. For February and March, we are at zero. We've had nobody fall for our internal phishing campaigns. And this is the reason we do that. We had 39,000 email, 3,000 of those were spam. Romania comes in number one as far as the firewall blocks by country. Just take a look at that for a minute. Our server system uptime is at 100%. Our data backup and restoration. Now, Dell, do you see that big dip right there? I know you got your eye on that. So this is a ratio. So we're 100%. So if we send 100 jobs, 100 out of 100 of those jobs were successful. This was a weekend, and we had a license issue, we had upgrade issues, software patch issues. Steven was hard at work on making all that stuff work, and by Monday or Tuesday, we were right back at 100%. So we did have a lull. Report on the EISAC, we had 86 of those emails come in. And the top three security threat patterns. The number one was, in all of those emails, was phishing and social engineering attacks, which is why we do all the internal training that we do. The second thing was brute force and credential attacks, which is why I report on our firewall hits. What's happening on all of the outer-facing equipment that we have, the routers, the switches, the firewalls. And then finally, the third security pattern was physical and insider threats to infrastructure. So reported here was there was somebody shot a high voltage wire, copper wire threat, drone activity, vandalism. So very interesting emails to go through. This is why Kevin, Kyle, and myself all get these emails. It keeps us up to date on really kind of what's happening out there. And then here's an ongoing projects slide that I put together. I'm not going to include this going forward in my presentation, but it'll be directly after this black slide. So you guys all have access to the drive. Has anyone accessed the drive? Has anyone looked at the stuff we put out there, the report you have? So I'm going to include this slide, not in the presentation, but just for your guys' viewing. And this is ongoing IT projects. I've broken those projects into four different areas: security and infrastructure enhancements, operational improvements, system maintenance and compliance, and then miscellaneous projects. So if you ever feel bored or you want to see what IT is working on for any given month, feel free to jump in there, get on my report, and that slide will be in there. And that's my report.
Thank you, Scott.
Yep.
So who takes care of all the licensing while I'm down?
Steven and Merlin.
Oh, jeez.
It's a lot to keep up on.
All right, we're going to go to Jonathan with financials.
All right. Start with our statement of operations on line one this month for March. Our operating revenues were $3,622,000. Our cost of purchased power on line three was $2,381,000, which brings our line 20 total cost of electric service to $3,887,000. And then we had on line 22 interest received from investments, $84,000, and our line 29 margins, we had a net loss of $150,000 for this month. So we had projected to have a loss of around $50,000, and we are seeing with these two lines here on the top, our operating revenue and also our cost of purchased power, both of those are pretty consistently being lower than what we have budgeted for the year. So when our revenue is down, then our power cost is also down. And so that's, and it's been pretty pretty consistent to the same amount there. Our for line or line 29 year to date margins, which is his first quarter, we're right at $25,000, so just a little bit above break even. We are we're a little below where our budget is, 250. So our first month, when we had the we had a full month of Tenasca, and any extra hydro that we had potentially or had the potential to receive, we did not. And so that first month kind of hit us, but we've been pretty consistently on track for the next 2 months. And but with that being said, in the past, the last few years, we've been really cash rich, and our margins have been high. And this year, and especially the first 6 months, we're continually going to have low cash flow for this quarter and the next quarter. And then after the second half of the year, things will pick up again. But we're still on track to be pretty close to what we have projected for our revenues for this year. So our balance sheet on the left side, we'll start on our asset side, line 5, our net utility plant closed with a value of $146,980,000. Our line 8, investments in associated organizations, so our patronage capital is $3.6 million. We had cash on line 15. Our temporary investments, line 18, and then our line 23, materials and supplies, all contribute to our total line 29 asset value of $187,367,000. Our liabilities, and on our liability side, our total margins for line 36, $127,921,000. We had long-term debt on line 40, and our line 48 accounts payable, and then our line 57 total liabilities and equities of $187,367,000. So about a $1.5 million growth in our assets from December of 24. So at the top, the detail of our cash held in our checking accounts. We had a monthly ending balance of $6,156,000. And towards the bottom, our Morton account closed with a value of just over $16 million. And then our Goldman account is just over $2 million. We've been advised to move, typically in the last year or so, that Goldman account was around $600,000. And advisors Dan and Jason advised us to move $2 million over there because the short-term rate that we were getting on the majority of these funds wasn't as high as what the Goldman account was. So that's why we moved that over there. The short-term rate was a little bit higher. So. And here's a breakdown of our assets in the Morton account by security type and in the pie chart, and then by security duration and the bar graph. As of March 31st, OPTE has a total of 18,878 customers with an increase of 39. Our financial ratios that we report, our modified debt service coverage ratio with estimates through the end of the year is 1.83. Our equity as a percentage of assets, 68%. And then our times interest earned ratio, that's a year-to-date ratio. So this first quarter is 1.06. Our goal, it's below our goal, and our minimum is 1.25, but that's a year to date, and that'll continue to creep up as the year plays out. Connection fees we received 30 for March, valued at $41,556. Current billing arrangements, we had 24 residential customers at 3,769 and two commercial at $2,500, and then our roundup program balances are there, $1,536 in Virgin Valley and $521 in Wyoming Valley. And we had our first quarter of 2025 for our loans with CFC was due March 31st. The quarterly payment was just over $1.4 million. That was made on time. And that brings our total outstanding balance with CFC at $45,605,000. And again, our average rate on our loans is 3.35%. And these rates are really good compared to what the rates are available these days. As point out last, when we repriced this one loan, loan number 7, we repriced just over 5%, and we do get our discount with our discounts of 4.73%. We have approved the budget, our capital project budget, and our 10-year reliability plan, and a lot of those projects are that were approved to start this year, and then we've also had some that have been moved up a little because of lead times have changed and the costs on some of those projects and equipment has increased lots with I guess since the beginning of the year with the things that have gone on in our current administration. And just to give you a heads up, some of those projects and equipment that we were anticipating of not starting till 2026, we've actually had to start purchasing some of those and starting the purchase process of those in 2025. So here's the breakdown of our customer class, or our revenues by customer class. And we have six different customer classes. I always get confused because we skip. Our utility doesn't use all of these. But we have six different customer classes, and we display this for you all and for the public, so we can let you know what our basically the revenues that are brought in by each customer class, the number of meters per customer class, and then the amount of kilowatts sold. And down here at the bottom, these are the totals for March, and our monthly cost for March was right at 7.35 cents. Our monthly revenue was 12.23 cents. And our 2025 average cost is our average 8.18 cents.
Is that because hydro is doing better down than it was previous month?
Yes. So it was higher in January because we had less, and then we had quite a bit in February and March. Almost double the amount actually that was available in January for February and March. So that was very beneficial for those costs. And that concludes my presentation unless you have any further questions.
Has it just been weather that we're slightly below budget and our ratios are below what we hope for? Is there another factor?
Yeah. Mainly that's the weather is what we're seeing. We try to predict the best that we can.
Yeah,
so the revenues were a little down, but the power costs were a little down too. So, yeah.
Do you guys have any project earmarked? sounds like prices are going up. We're going to be over budget on some things, and margins are coming down. Is there any projects or things earmarked that we may put off till later? Or maybe I'm not sure if you're the the one to ask that or not, but
well,
we can talk about that.
We have, well, we will be talking a lot about those.
That's coming up
so,
in a little I'll bit.
But yeah, we haven't had the issue, you know, in the past however many years where we've been cash rich and revenues have been high, and we've been using a lot of our revenues to pay for the projects. And now since we made the decision to swallow the majority of our, you know, rate increase instead of passing on to the customers, that things are tighter now. So we've got to be stricter and more accountable for, you know, how everything's reported and reported. So.
And we see that Jonathan reported that we have about $26 million in cash. And you remember that when we borrowed for these projects, that's exactly how much we borrowed. So we have been able to pay for the majority of the work that has already been done through those margins. We see a cost shift now. Anytime you have a reduction in margins, you have a cash flow adjustment that follows along with that. So we're going to talk about that. I don't want Jonathan to steal all the thunder from my report.
Okay, you have any more questions?
Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay, you're welcome.
I met with the local utility leadership from here in Moapa Valley. We convened originally to talk about a bill draft that was AB 456 that was put forth that would require for public utilities to give all of their correspondence to their customers in a minimum of 3 languages. It could have been up to 10 languages that would have been required. It also added protections for customer information privacy, and it set rules to prevent the termination of services for what they considered small amounts. So it removed some of the utilities' abilities to disconnect service for non-pay based on certain parameters. When we met about that, I met with Moapa Valley Water District, the phone company, and the irrigation district. And we talked through that, and we do not fall under the jurisdiction of that bill currently. Honestly, that bill did not make it out of, it didn't get a hearing for committee. And so that doesn't mean that it's necessarily dead, because of course it could be resurrected going forward, but we're monitoring it closely. We did not fall under that because it was for utilities that are governed by the PUC. And as you know, we are not. But that doesn't mean that that doesn't have trickle-down effects that could eventually affect us. But also, it could have affected our neighboring utilities. And so we work closely with them. And I want to make sure that I stay in good communication with that leadership of those other utilities going forward.
I looked into this one, and it's a bad bill. It would be just horrific for every utility. Basically, it makes it so a renter could go a year without paying their bills.
Oh, gosh.
Because yeah. you had to give them, for example, 6 months before you could turn it off, but then you also couldn't turn it off between, what was it, April and October. And so if they timed it right, you quit paying come October, your 6 months, and then just into the summer deadline, and then they couldn't turn you off either. So you could technically go a year without paying your bill before they could disconnect you. It's an absolute horrible bill for any and every utility. And the concern for OPD is the wording's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
The bill doesn't necessarily say all those that are regulated by PUC. It doesn't say that.
Said the size as well.
It says, yeah, and it says all the electric utilities and everybody else. It just said that the PUC will come up with the rules for the language and that kind of stuff. And so it's interesting to watch this, because all it would take is a little wording change, and all of a sudden it does apply to us. Mm-hmm. We're not under the PUC, but the PUC will come up with the rules to apply to every electrical company. And water company and everything else. So I am very happy to hear that it didn't make it out of committee.
Yeah, it actually, it never even got a hearing.
Where did it come from?
People who are worried about the little guy and getting their power turned off in the summer or their water turned off in the summer. But they didn't think this one through.
It's received pretty harsh opposition, and we're keeping a close eye on it, but we're also feel very confident that if it did make it to Governor Lombardo's desk, that it would be vetoed. That's the final thing. So we'll continue to watch that. One of the things that we as a leadership group discussed, Joe from across the street said, so what's keeping you up at night? And so we went around and kind of talked about that. And each of those men have been in those roles for quite some time, and they all kindly shared with me that I will no longer be sleeping. There will always be something that will be keeping me up at night. So that was their words of wisdom in ingratiating me into that group. We've been watching the station power bill. That is AB 529. That bill was taken to committee by Chair Assembly Watts. That was originally put forth by Valley Electric, and then now Nevada Rural Electric has put their support behind this bill as well. This is mostly in regards to protecting our service territories and our boundaries. What it specifically relates to is when out-of-state solar developers or renewable developers come and put infrastructure into our service territories, and then our local economy gets no benefit from that. So this is protection saying, if you have infrastructure that you've placed in our service territory, you must buy power from us. Your station power should come from the utility where it's located, and therefore giving economic boom to the utility or the community that it's placed in. So we are following that very closely. That did actually make it out of committee on April 11th. There was a lot of negotiations. It came out of committee with very clean language, but now the fun begins. There will, of course, be the Christmas tree of language as all of the developers and their lobbying teams work to put their additional language into the bill. We've all been put on notice that we will be headed to Carson City at some point to help further this along. But Lisa, our new executive director for NREA, is just going like gangbusters, and she's working very hard on this and doing a very good job with our lobbying team as well. I am currently in negotiations with two solar developers residing in our service territory that have not been receiving their station power from OPD-5. Tenasca has been helping with those details, and they have given us last week a quoted price to serve them. So I have a call with them tomorrow with Tenasca to finalize all of those numbers, and then Byron and I will begin all of the talks for the documentation of the contracts with both of those entities. They both are reluctantly open to visiting with us. We'll say that.
Who's serving them right now?
In the energy.
Is it a significant amount of power?
One of them is, yes. So we have one entity. There's four that are in our service territory, two that we are currently serving that equate to about 1 megawatt of station power. We have a third one that is about 1 megawatt and one that's about 14 megawatts, and we will be making the transition that we will be serving them. So that transition was supposed to be that NV Energy served them through the construction phase, and then when they hit their go-live date that they transition to OPD-5, that's taken longer than it should have, and so we are working on those negotiations. And NV Energy has been working on those negotiations with us as well.
So the only people fighting it are the solar companies? NV Energy's not being difficult, or are they both?
They're making money.
They're slow to respond. They're not fighting us, but they've been slow.
Because the solar industry, the solar company's got to be excited for the transition because we're at lower rates than NV Energy.
We are not.
Oh, we're not lower rates?
No. We will not be.
Not there. Not with them.
No.
Okay.
No, because they have to have, you guys remember with our PPA with Tenasca, anything that's over 1.5 megawatts requires their own special contract. That special contract rate will be for them, but that the biggest caveat for that is that it saves our current customers from them taking any kind of a rate hit to help us serve that load. We'll have a completely separate contract with a completely separate rate, and our current customers will see no effect from that. So,
so that new rate, special contract rate, I assume that means if we were contracting our power today, it would be more than we contracted it for last year.
Yes, sir. We could talk about that in executive session. I attended a new CEO orientation in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago. There were 38 new CEOs from across the nation. This was a wonderful experience. I got to, it was hosted by NRECA, CFC, NRTC, and Federated. And it was wonderful learning experience, wonderful networking experience. There was a couple of takeaways, though, that I want to talk with you guys about tonight. One of the big things that came from this, and I had listened to a talk from NRECA's lobbying team, said that 85% of the new demand and new generation is coming on. We're going to see an 85% increase over the next 8 years of overall demand across the nation. The equivalent of what is being retired over the next 8 years is, in fact, 85% of generation. So we are swinging from one end to the other with growth and then lack of generation. The it's not 85%. 85% of the new generation that is coming on, got ahead of myself, is renewables with battery storage. And so we know that that renewable energy is intermittent and at certain times of the day. So even though we have this huge swing that is equivalent to what is demand and then what's being retired, the new generation that is coming on is only for certain times of the day. It's not even going to come close to meeting that. So what does that mean for us? What does it mean for Overton? But what does it mean for us as a nation? Right now, FERC came out with their study and said anticipate in the next 8 years that there will be rolling blackouts. There's just no way that we're going to get enough generation put on to keep up with the demand. Now, President Trump let me think if it was the week I was in Washington, D.C., maybe 2 weeks ago, signed several executive orders focused on boosting coal production and extending coal-fired power plants that were set for retirement. The executive orders directed federal agencies to remove barriers from coal mining and prioritize coal leasing on federal lands. So the government is aware NRECA has been very active with President Trump's transition team and now the Department of Energy on making them aware of the reliability concerns that we're seeing across the nation. We talked about two nuclear plants that were either slated for retirement or had been retired that will now be coming back on. They've received the funding for those. That takes time, but we are seeing some movements with coal, natural gas, and the nuclear.
But only to bring back the old, no new nuclear plants?
Correct. Nothing yet. One of the things that they talked about that I thought was really interesting, Jack talked about in his class that he took in Atlanta, the significance of these data centers and what does AI mean? And we know that we're requiring these data centers, that artificial intelligence is requiring the building of new data centers. And I'm thinking, is it just that everybody's so excited to use ChatGPT that we have to keep? But one of the things they told us was that a ChatGPT search requires 10 times the amount of energy as a Google search. So that makes sense to me. And of course, ChatGPT and those other AI forums are picking up, but also it's just growing and learning so much, and it just is power intense. So I thought that was very interesting. I sat with a new CEO from Colorado, and they currently have a drone program where they fly drones on their transmission line and for vegetation, looking at areas of high growth vegetation. Then they bring back all of those pictures, and then they have artificial intelligence that scans the pictures, looks for anomalies, and kicks it out. And then they have a retired lineman that clicks through each one of those pictures and says, yep, this is an issue. And then he creates the service ticket and sends them out for maintenance. So we talk so much about AI and where it's going and what it's capable of, but I love to listen to people who are actually using it and they're getting some value from it because it seemed like such an unknown. I think that will only continue to grow as we continue to go to these classes. We'll find more and more things that hopefully we can implement it someday in our programs. We spoke a lot about planning, preparation, and forward building. I have a list of ideas for you guys for my goals, my plans that I want to discuss with you further, but I'm not going to do it all in my very first meeting. So we did a revenue requirement study with CFC. Jonathan led that off. We just completed that and received the study information back. One of the things that we asked CFC to look at is January, we reported a larger loss than what we had anticipated. It's really difficult to forecast and budget with such a sizable rate increase. One of the things that happens when you have a rate increase is that people just naturally conserve. You do your best guess of what you think it's going to flush out at, but also they did their scientific best guess on what the rate increase needed to be. And so I asked them to come back and do a revenue requirement study now that we had 2024 all done to see what does it look like? What does it look like that we were going to need? Does it look like our rate increase was going to be adequate? And so we've had one meeting with them, and next week Jonathan and I are going to sit down and crunch the numbers and see what it is that we're looking like. But their initial reaction was, your rate increase looks to be adequate. The caveat is, when is solar going to come on, and is solar going to produce exactly what they anticipated that they would sell to us? So that's an unknown that we have to wait and see, honestly. The most recent update that I've received is that the solar is still on track and going to be on time.
And when is that?
July 1. Mm-hmm. We have transitioned out, or we are in the process of transitioning out of the tri-party agreement with NV Energy and becoming a NITS status with them. We've been working through those billing changes. Jonathan has been in discussion with NV Energy about those calculations, and we will see an updated transmission bill for both January and February. We were able to come to a consensus on what that should have been, and they are correcting that. And we'll be sending that to us. It isn't significant, but I'm not overpaying a penny. So they're going to get their bills corrected. As Randall indicated, we did interviews. I participated in the second round of interviews for the engineering department. We've offered that to a candidate. And next month, we'll give you the full report on that. But I'm excited. We have Beattie, who has given us her notice of retirement, and we're going to miss her, but it's the changing of the guard, and it's always exciting to bring somebody new in and watch them learn and grow, so I'm excited about that process. We hosted a wonderful luncheon for Mendes for his retirement. He sent me the sweetest note today, wishing me well, and I don't know if he's listening or not. Stephen, is he logged in, or is he maybe incognito? I'm hoping that he is home. I wished him well, and I wish that he's not already on Debbie's last nerve. So I told him if he is, go work in the yard. But I appreciate all that came and participated in that. I think that Mendes felt very loved from that luncheon, and we gave him a very nice send-off. We held the NREA board meeting virtually this month. The topics of discussion were the current legislative session, of course, bills that we are monitoring, and we have been sending emails back and forth a lot lately on Bill 529. We are headed to the Washington, D.C. Legislative conference that's being held by NRECA. That is the last week of April. Vernon will join me on that trip, And Vernon has already proven to be a wonderful asset in that planning. He has used some of his contacts to facilitate meetings for us when we get to DC that were maybe a little bit slow to respond. And if you remember, the same thing happened in Carson City. So he's already worth his weight in gold, and we'll put him front and center in those meetings. President Trump signed an executive order this month, I think it was actually the end of March, titled Achieving Efficiency Through State and Local Preparedness. And this executive order directed federal government to review national preparedness and response policies and then give recommendations on how to transition from the federal government down to the state and local level. This doesn't affect us today, but it will eventually affect us as this trickle down. And I just, because this has been front and center on some of the news, I wanted to talk to you guys about the fact that Overton Power has a emergency response plan. We have a disaster recovery plan. We have a critical infrastructure plan, and we have a cyber recovery plan. As a team, we are going to sit down and go through every one of those plans and make sure that they mesh together, that we have covered everything, and that they can work in cohesion to be one disaster recovery plan. And then we will start doing some tabletop and scenario-based training so that we're in preparation for that. I think that this comes in with planning and preparation. You can't be too prepared for a cyber event or some kind of an emergency response. And so I just want you to know that as this executive order comes out, we are already taking steps to make sure that we're ready and prepared for that. And that concludes my report, unless I can answer questions for you guys.
One question. July 1st, when our solar facilities come on, what does that do to our NERC status? Do we have to do a change in that status because now they become a supplier on our system?
We have a call. Randall is facilitating a call with WEC next week to discuss that.
It's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. Tomorrow, not next week. Time flies when you're having fun, Rich. we have a consultant that's helping us to advise on that, so we'll report that back to you guys.
I got one more question. A number of months ago, we had a Pulse accident. We were working on some new policies, implementing things, and I just wondered there's any update or how that's going, gone. So I don't know if that's what I'm asking you or Kyle.
I'll start and then Kyle can finish.
Okay.
First off, Kyle has done a great job in that the policies and procedures have been reviewed and are they've met and done additional training. We actually have a vault rescue training planned for here on site for tomorrow. With our crews, and the update from our staff is that they are back to work and healthy and doing wonderful. Good. We are still under the OSHA investigation and waiting for that response. They told us that they had the investigator had submitted his report to his supervisor, and that we would have was
up
it?
To 4 months.
Well, but it was, what, 24 hours or 48 hours to respond
48 hours after.
When we received that. And they told us that the day before Kyle and I were headed to Carson City. So we made all kinds of preparations to have our computers and be ready to crank out a response to them. And then we heard nothing. And so Kyle reached out to him, and they said, well, we have up to 4 months to actually issue you.
Deliver it.
Yeah. So we sweated bullets for 3 days waiting to only find out that it could take up to about 4 months. But we have we have created a report. We've completed our investigation. And then we have a very good response to all of the things that we have updated and changed as a learning from that process. If I've forgotten something.
Hit most of it. I mean, it's definitely been slower than I had hoped. I mean, obviously, we'd rather get out a week or 2 weeks after that accident and say we have new procedures in place and then we have all the new tools in place to just be prepared for everything. But the wheels move slow. We visited NV Energy and learned a lot from them. We're very appreciative, and we've been in touch with other neighboring utilities finding out tips and tricks that they've adopted over the years, or the weaknesses that they see that maybe we're going to pick up. We're not going to have those weaknesses. So we've taken on a lot of training in-house, quite honestly, and it's always been staged training. It's very hard for my personality. I want to go have this training tomorrow with Vault Rescue out there and have a solid procedure in place and just be able to give them the world. But it's what we're going to do tomorrow and thereafter to get us through those vaults and have safe practices in place. But then what we learn from it, it's going to take budgeting and different procedures that we'll adopt a month from now. It's going to be very fluid, continually moving until we get this ironed out perfectly.
We're ahead of where we were, but
absolutely,
you still got more distance before you're going to be where you want to be.
There was a few big chunks that we kicked off. We obviously talked about the procedures, and we got through the procedure pretty well for where we're at. We got new tools in place. Another one was just looking at our underground procedures in general. There was a few gray areas that, quite honestly, the industry has just been allowing to happen. We've taken it upon ourselves to be, I'd say, better than a lot of our neighboring utilities, taking on the gas monitors, as far as like underground gas monitors. That was just never a practice that's followed anywhere, and we've got that in place just this last week. There's a lot of processes and procedures that we're taking on that have taken us well above and beyond where we were.
Good, thank you.
How's the reaction by the employees to your policy changes?
Overall it's good, but obviously, you know, it's something I monitor constantly. We talked about mental health, the NREA best practices last month, and that's always been on my forethought. But to go through a class and hear other linemen speak on the mental health of those men, not only that haven't been through an accident, but just in our industry, has been especially hard. So that is it's right there on the forefront of my thoughts. Those men, quite honestly, have been outstanding. The three men that were involved with that have been outstanding. But that could change next week. Their hearts might be changed. They might have a tough day or whatever, but yeah, we're all keen to that. We're all watching that.
All right, thank you. Let's go presentation for Morton Assets Management.
Jonathan, I'm going to let you kick this off.
All righty. So this is Dan Rusk. He can introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Go ahead. From Morton Advisors. We asked him, Lisa and I asked him to come in and give us a little update about the basically state of the economy, and then a little bit about how our assets are performing. So we're so grateful that he's here to present to us. So.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So first of all, very uncertain times in terms of economic policy. Uncertainty leads to volatility, right? The one thing that markets hate more than anything is to not know. Because then businesses can't make decisions, people can't forecast. And so this is actually really interesting. If you look at this index of economic uncertainty, it's actually on par with about the peak of where it was during COVID, when the world was shutting down. So very difficult time to make forecasts and decisions. When I get people that ask me, okay, well, what do you think is going to happen? The current policies have widened the distribution of possible outcomes in interest rates. So, go back to stats class, you have the standard distribution, and, you kind of assume the middle, but you take into account the tail risks. Well, right now, that middle has kind of come down, and the tails have widened out and gotten bigger in terms of, what the possibilities are. Forefront of this is tariffs. And the simplest answer you can get, and kind of the standard answer for tariffs, is that it raises prices, right? And that cost will most likely, almost always, especially with how large they are, get passed down to the consumer. And not only that, but then domestic producers, with that easing competition, will often raise their prices as well to widen out their margins. So typically you get this cost push inflation, and that's kind of what Econ 101 would tell you. An example of that was in 2018-2019, when Trump initiated tariffs, we did see a slight uptick in those costs and in that inflation. What people don't take into account is the deflationary case, and this has happened before. So tariffs can slow economic activity, and it may be temporary, it may be, you know, more permanent, it kind of depends. But, you know, you have this retaliation talk, you have, you know, the size of the tariff changing constantly. We had some extreme cases where Apple one day, when Trump had pulled back some of the tariffs on China and said that he was going to increase them the next day, Apple actually chartered 6 cargo planes and brought 1.5 million iPhones back to the States. So you kind of have this front-loading effect, which can affect GDP. So we'll likely see a decrease in GDP because people are importing, companies are rushing to import without making that sale on the other end, which actually will be a net reduction in GDP. But then, you know, you talk about the consumer, and will the consumer, I guess the number one thing in econ is when you see a theory, there's always this thing where it's all things held equal, right? So will the consumer keep consuming the same way they were consuming with these tariffs is the big question, and how much will that behavior change? And in the 1930s, there was a increase in tariffs from almost 0% to about 10% effective tariff rate. And obviously that all coincides with Great Depression, different things. I'm not saying that's gonna happen, but that was deflationary because people weren't consuming. So on one side, inflationary, interest rates move up. On the other side, deflationary, interest rates would actually go down. What we're seeing in the market right now, and this is, I guess, the Vegas books on where the Fed will keep interest rates. And remember, the Fed controls the overnight rate. It doesn't control the 10-year, the 30-year where we're borrowing. They control the overnight rate. But pre-April 2nd, we were pricing in maybe 2 rate cuts. Now it's about 4 to 5 rate cuts. Over the next year or so. That you cut interest rates to stimulate, right? That means that the market is expecting a reduction in consumption due to uncertainty and potentially a recession the way that this is pricing out right now.
Where does that overnight rate trickle down to?
So it trickles down to like your savings rate in a bank account. A money market fund would coincide very closely. The money that we hold, that we invest for you, we keep it pretty liquid, so that definitely affects that as well. Okay. Forecasts for, so this quarter over quarter forecast for GDP and inflation. Right now, what we're seeing is inflation projections are moving up, right? Hence, tariffs create inflation. But GDP is actually going lower than it had been forecasted before. So consumption is contracting. Thought this was funny. So my tariffs aren't working. Have you tried turning them on and off again? So this graph here, it's really messy, but right there. So the uncertainty in policy has created massive volatility in the bond markets. The 30-year US Treasury yield hit its second largest weekly rise in over 40 years. Right? So we're not part of having liquid financial markets is just having some level of consistency, you know, reduction in volatility. And right now we're seeing a lot of volatility in yields. In the instance of borrowing money, I was talking to a bank earlier today and they said it's really hard to make a deal right now because, you know, they could tentatively agree on something and then the next day rates could be totally somewhere else. So kind of back on that topic of reduction in GDP, increase in inflation, the way that things are forecasting right now, we're seeing longer term rates move up and shorter term rates actually move down. So, you know, back to that chart where I said inflationary or deflationary, the market's kind of thinking deflationary almost on the front end and then inflationary long term. I guess is kind of where that's trading right now. In terms of the portfolio is very, very conservative. About, 46% of the portfolio right now is in FDIC insured CDs. That means that that's a variety of CDs under $250,000, so they all are at different banks earning, and so they're covered by the FDIC umbrella. The money market fund, that's all government-backed. U.S. government debt, agency bonds, which have the implied guarantee of the government as well. So we're not worried about the portfolio if we were to technically have a recession or not. The portfolio is in a great position. It's really safe. This here is just the cash flow that's rolling off over the next 12 months. There's about $13 million that will mature. Sounds like there's a lot of projects going on and that's getting used up. So that's kind of the schedule of when that becomes available. And then this year, so just looking at, you know, the different calendar years, 2022, 2023, 2024, you can see, you know, the increase in interest rates in the interest earned as interest rates have risen. And then if you look on the bottom, the net income figure, so in 2024, the portfolio produced about $1.5 million in income. So that, as the balance gets spent down, obviously that will decrease, and you know, whatever happens with interest rates from here, but you know, that's not an insignificant number there. So yeah, any questions?
So what is going to happen, Dan?
well, typically, if you talk to 10 economists, you probably get 10 different answers. Right now, you'd probably get 30. So, yeah, I would say if tariffs, you kind of have to decide, is it a negotiating tactic? Is it an income tactic? Is it a divest from China tactic? If it's a negotiating tactic and we come back to a weighted tariff that's a lot lower, then we probably just see a little bit of inflation. If it stays where it's at, we essentially had an effective tariff rate of about 2%. Coming into April, most economists were thinking our weighted average tariff rate would sit around 8%, 10% on the high. When Liberation Day happened, we came up to about 25%. So we'd be going from about 2-3% to 25%. That would create a recession. Whether that's a technical recession of just a huge slowdown in GDP and people keep their jobs, or if that trickles down into a real full-blown recession, I think at some point the government would back down in negotiations, or the Fed would come in. And so I don't think the worst case scenario is the likely scenario. But another thing to keep in mind is the U.S. actually has a huge amount of debt that has to be refinanced in third quarter, probably the largest amount ever. And Scott Bessent has talked in the past that he wants to bring the 10-year yield down. And so if they can get yields to actually come down a little bit, it would help on the refinancing of debt. And politically, it would make sense to do your anti-growth policies first and then come in and then have a killer year, you know, second year leading into midterms, right? So part of me thinks that they would try to suppress interest rates and be okay with growth declining on the front end of this year, mm-hmm. and then as long as they can turn it around and kind of keep control over that. So.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions for Dan?
When are we supposed to buy?
Dollar cost average.
Do you mind pulling up the slide where you said the day thoughts for the for the interest rates are? So currently we're at, was it 4.3?
Yeah, so roughly 4.25 rate, 4.27. I think the slide you showed, the Goldman Sachs money market portals right around that number.
Mm-hmm.
And so that implied rate would be your path for the most liquid money. So it gets down to the low 3% right now is kind of where markets are pricing in.
So within a year, about 1% reduction?
Yeah. The thing is, this can swing wildly, right?
Yeah, this is day rate.
It's really good one or two meetings out, and it's really good to get a consensus idea of what the market's thinking in a moment.
Yeah.
But that many cuts would imply at least a technical recession. And so that's where the markets are hedged right now. And, you know, taking tariffs off the table, or at least, you know, giving like a really clear policy of what's going to happen, could remove a lot of that doubt. And any other questions?
But you anticipate, so short-term rates going down, long-term rates like mortgages and stuff going up
and going up. Yeah, it's been steepening. And you know, part of that is just we'll have an increase in price level. You know, manufacturing in the U.S. will cost more. Most likely we move manufacturing, you know, a lot of it to like Vietnam, India, Thailand. But there will be some reshoring, most likely. But the other thing you have to take into account, though, is if you're a big corporation, the investment and the time to actually bring things back to the U.S. and, you know, make a real impact and produce in the U.S. You could do all of that, and then in 4 years, when you're finally, you know, firing things up, the whole policy could change. Right. So there is kind of incentive to play along, you know, say, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and kind of like find every reason why it has to get put off, and then, you know, ultimately just drag your feet. So, yeah, it just kind of depends on how widely that gets adopted. So.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Dan.
Let's go to letter K, review of possible approval of revisions to the OPD org chart.
This is the current approved org chart. We sent this out to you guys for review. Stephen, if you will bring up the new, you'll see that there's a couple of changes that I am proposing. One is to remove the interim CEO position. The other is to move the executive assistant from the administrative services department and have her answer directly to the general manager. The other change that I have made is not necessarily a change for you guys on the org chart, but just to make you aware. Effective Monday, I moved Jonathan from the finance department supervisor to the financial services manager to complete my management group. And so I'm looking for approval to make the change to remove the interim CEO position and to move the executive assistant from administrative services over to answer directly to the general manager.
That would just make perfect sense to me. I don't know why you wouldn't. Okay, Discussion, looking for a motion.
I have a question on the vacant positions. I see in 2024 they were vacant as well. And what's the process of putting that out? What's the timeline? How do you proceed with that?
I'm assuming they were on the line ops.
For two groundsmen and one lineman.
Yes. So those will remain vacant. And when we are considering, we're going to do a manpower assessment for future growth. When that happens, we would come to you and say, we'll now be filling those positions.
Kind of like potentials, but not quite.
Yes. Right? Yes. Yeah. But we're not proposing to fill those at that time.
And then in this organizational chart, I know you moved a few people around. How do you guys, and I don't know, I'm just asking, but the promotion process, is that, does Open Power, do they put that like the in-house position where people apply, or is that just kind of like people are already in there to where they're being promoted in-house? How does
both.
That work?
Both of those situations happen.
Depending on what it is.
It's specific to the position. So when we have a position available, we just currently had an engineering position that was available. We posted that both externally and internally, and we had internal and external candidates, and all were interviewed.
And do the internal have any kind of percentage above, like?
Leg up?
Yeah, like a leg up per se, because of the internal, like I give you an example, City of Mesquite, they do a in-house projection of fill the position. They have, say, a 5-day period in-house, people get that if they're qualified, then they interview in-house instead of putting it out-house. If those are not filled in-house, then it goes to the public. Mm-hmm. Is that similar, or?
It is in a way. What we do is, if you already work in a department and you have the skills necessary to move up, we don't consider that as applying for a position. We consider that as us preparing you for promotion. And then we have, if we have a position that we've opened up that could be somebody from a completely different department who doesn't necessarily have the skills for that skill set for that role, they then apply for and are interviewed for it. That doesn't mean that, of course, they're considered. The other option that gives us is for that we open that up internally because we want to see, are you interested in this? Sure. If you work in the finance department, but you've always longed to be a lineman, We want to know that you're looking for that, so we get that training.
Where anybody can kind of apply. Where
absolutely.
They fit the bill or not, they still have that opportunity.
Yes.
And then the other question I have is, when you do the interviews, do you ever bring in outside people to sit on interviews? Over the years, I've always bring in my opponent from Boulder City to come in and sit in to have a different set of eyes, so it's not so.
So what we have, and I've participated in that. I've sat in on some city interviews for their positions.
Yes.
What we have right now is a team that does interviews that always includes human resources and the manager over that department, and then we fill the other part on that team with other managers. That's the first round of interviews. For the second round of interviews, then the general manager participates in that, as well as the supervisor for that department. So we have a fresh perspective and a fresh set of eyes, but there's always the manager of the department and then a manager from something completely different, because again, they bring a different perspective to what you're looking for.
I just want to make sure that, or at least to my understanding, the people that currently work here, like an in-house position per se, hopefully they're already vested into the company to where they want to excel, they want that promotional opportunity or train, whatever the case may be, prior to going to the public. And if that doesn't quite fit, then go to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, more discussion. Looking for a motion on the org chart changes.
I'll move that we approve revisions to the org chart with associated adjustments as presented.
Okay. Second. All right. We've got a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Opposition.
Opposing.
Okay. L. review and approval for OPD general manager CEO policy for possible action.
Thank you, Stephen. This policy, the reason that I wanted to bring this forward to you today, when I was at the new CEO conference, we talked with the legal team from NRECA. And one of the things that they discussed with us was the general manager or the CEO's ability to name non-director officers. So the key point of being able to name a non-director officer is we currently have insurance that supports the staff. And so if something were to happen and you are named as a non-director officer and say a customer or a group wanted to sue Overton Power, they could also try to sue you as an individual. If you're named as a non-director officer, the insurance then helps give you another level of protection. It was originally written for CEOs and CFOs, but it takes in all non-director officers. So I asked them to define what is a non-director officer. You guys are considered directors. These guys are considered non-director officers. Even though their title is manager, when I discussed this with their legal team, they asked, you know, does Jonathan work on the budget? Does Jonathan help make strategic decisions? Does Jonathan report and sign the financial statements? Yes, yes, yes. He is a non-director officer. It doesn't matter what his actual title is. It's what he would be considered. So one of the key things for our insurance is that the general manager has the authority to name non-director officers. You guys already give me the authority to hire and promote and set people's title, but it's never been clearly defined in the policy as naming non-director officers. So when I went in, originally when I talked with Byron, that was my only change, was this simple sentence. But then I had to change that sentence because it said he. And so I changed it to he, she. And I didn't want you guys to believe that I brought this policy just so I could add she everywhere. So I changed some other wording so that it had some meat to it. As you guys read the red line of this, you can see that there's no substantial changes to any of the document, with the exception of me adding she and that I spelled out the naming of non-director officers. I didn't change any other duty that was given in here.
Discussion, thoughts, motion.
You've reviewed all that, Byron, and everything like that.
I have. I've reviewed and talked to Lisa about the policy.
I'll motion that we approve the changes to the GMCO policy of the AO2 for you guys presented.
Okay, got to have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Randy?
Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposing? Okay, very good. M, review and possible approval OPD employee driver regulation.
This policy was last reviewed in 2010. One of the things that was brought to my attention in this policy, if you looked at the red line, the requirements for receiving a CDL at the time stated that you must be 21 years of age. The federal and state laws allow for you to receive a CDL from the age of 18 to 20 with restrictions. You cannot travel you have to stay intrastate. You cannot have interstate travel. And there was another restriction on the length of vehicle that you can drive. We currently have somebody who falls within the age of 18 to 20 who is ready to get his CDL and is hoping that we could do that. But also, as I look through this policy, it was antiquated. There were a lot of things that have changed with the rules and regulations of a CDL. So we have cleaned that up. I changed grammatical things like removing the word district and changing to OPD-5, the typical that we have done as we've reviewed these policies. And the last and final change, it is here in bold, but we'll have Becky correct that on the clean version, that I put that we should bring this to you guys at a minimum of every 3 years because those state and federal laws and regulations are changing, and we should be reviewing this to make sure that we are acting appropriately. So that was my final change to the policy.
Every 3 years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hey, is it on the driver's license? I don't know that it matters, or even if anybody does this, is out of state license, does that affect that in any way? As far as if they live in Utah, or work for OPD, insurance-based, anything like that?
Not that I'm aware of, but no, it does not affect it. It's as long as it's a current driver's license. Yeah.
And then the other question I would have is on the drug testing in the policy, is that a random drug test? How often do you guys do it? Is that just computer generated? How does that work?
Random computer generated.
It's for all CDL drivers because that is required. And we have human resources here who can help me clarify if I say anything wrong.
Only for CDL drivers, not for staff?
Correct.
And in the time there's accidents?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, if there's an accident, regardless of your driver status, you have to get a drug test.
Even to keep your CDL, yeah.
You have to have it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we do have that, and it is computer generated, and it goes, they show up quarterly.
And for the work, for the city to get tagged 1 month and then the next month again, it's like, they're trying to tell me. I just curious how
lay off the wine.
I know, right?
I reviewed this policy as well. The updates are definitely needed and appropriate.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I move that we accept the policy as changed here.
Okay, very good. We've got a motion.
I'll second it.
And a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Public comments.
One more. We have one more.
There is.
Man.
Oh, wow. So excited. Oh, you're so excited.
He has to take a quick break.
Charting the course, Melissa's vision for the 90 days. First 90 days.
First 90 days.
Is that all we have?
No, I just, I'm on day three. I have six topics of concentration that I want to do in these first 90 days. These are, of course, open to discussion. And as a board, you guys may change, add, or delete focus on any of these areas as you see fit. Sorry, I've got to get the clicker. Thanks, Stephen. So my vision for the future of the company is to create a culture that starts with safety first. In every decision we make, safety will be first, before cost, before efficiency, before outage restoration time, before answering to a board member, before anything, safety is first. Every one of those things are critically important to our business, but never in any situation will they take priority over safety. After that key point, I want to ensure a culture that is data-driven, that focuses on accountability, collaboration, and acts in service to the communities that we serve. When I went to the MIP program back in Wisconsin, one of the professors shared with us a W. Edwards Deming quote that said, "In God we trust, all others must bring data." And that just spoke to my heart. I haven't decided if I want to put that on the wall in my office or right there in the boardroom, but that will be part of my future focus for my time as the CEO. I want to say that the strategies and the paths that we're currently on that have been laid out by you, the board, and by Mindus and his leadership won't change until data directs us that those we should do something different. Next slide, please, Stephen. My first of the six is to implement a culture of safety. Currently, I have seated new safety committee, and I have shared my expectations with that group. I have addressed the employees with this new mindset and set overall goals. I have been working with Kyle to schedule the NRECA Commitment to Zero 2.0 follow-up. We did an analysis and joined the Commitment to Zero 2.0. It's probably been about a year ago, I would say, right around there. We would like to bring NRECA back out and reassess and see what we have changed since we did that first assessment and where we need to go. I would also like to schedule a company-wide safety culture assessment. The Commitment to Zero 2.0 focuses strictly on the line crew, and I think that safety first is company-wide. Every employee should be assessed, and we should be setting goals for each and every one of us.
Would that be done by the committee?
The safety assessment will also be handled by NRECA, and then the goals that we come up with and the action plan will be implemented by the safety committee. They have a heavy lift. I gave them... Kyle is smiling at me, but I gave him a quite large honey-do list for that safety committee. Number two, I have assess culture and listen to strategic initiatives. I would like to, tonight you guys just approved my org chart change, so I would like to formalize this management group. I am meeting individually with each member of the management team. I will also be meeting individually with each member at the supervisory level, and I will be working to promote a culture of collaboration in those meetings. One of the things that OPD5 has gone through is for the last several years, we have had a culture of internal competition for the CEO position, for the CEO position replacement, for status in those departments. And that level of competition for that length of time creates fractures in both interdepartmentally and then intradepartmentally. And so we have got to focus on reestablishing the team mentality and working in collaboration. And I want that to both be within this management group, but across our company as a whole. Next slide, please. I would like to evaluate and assess both the reliability and capital expenditures. I want us to evaluate the timing and the necessity of every project on the reliability projects, as well as the currently approved capital expenditures. We talked tonight about when you reduce margins, you change cash flow. We know that 2025 is going to be a little bit financially uncertain, only in that we've reduced those margins and we're waiting to see if solar is going to come on and if it's going to deliver what it said that they anticipated delivering. And so I think that we need to, and this management group is going to start next week evaluating that reliability plan. I don't want to remove items from the list, but I want to reevaluate the timing and the priority of them. The other thing that Jonathan alluded to was that some of those things have changed just out of necessity. We have three transformers that were recently ordered that we thought were going to take 3 years to get here. They're going to be here at the end of the year. They're critically important to the reliability of our system. But on top of that, they're more expensive than what we originally thought they were going to be. We went with a U.S.-based company to help avoid some of the increases that were coming down the pipe with tariffs. Kevin received information this week that there may still be tariff implications with that because they buy some of their materials from out of country. So these are things that we have to not stop work. We have current projects that we're continuing on, but we are going to do a critical analysis of every one of those projects, and we will be reporting that back to you in the next couple of months, where we see cash flow going, as well as where we see margins. Next slide, please. Government relations. I am, of course, monitoring and contributing to the process of AB 529 with the NREA. I will continue to monitor AB 456, again with NREA and my other local constituents here in Moapa and Virgin Valley. I will be visiting with our federal representatives along with Vernon in Washington, D.C. in 2 weeks and attending that legislative conference. And then we have already got, Vernon and I have meetings slated for both state and local representatives. In the next coming weeks, we have meetings with Commissioner Kirkpatrick, local utility leadership, and I have already been scheduled to speak at a local chamber event coming next month. Next slide, please. All of that leads to strategic planning. We are scheduling, and we have the dates locked for our strategic plan that will be facilitated with NRU-CFC. We are going to assess and prepare strategic initiatives for that discussion, and I want to impress upon the board the value of full attendance and contribution to that process. The current process is that the board contributes to that for about a day and a half. So we would typically travel in and arrive on Monday night. We would have a full day of meetings and participation on the Tuesday, then be complete about halfway through on Wednesday, and the board would then be released, and the staff would stay for the remainder of that day to start with all of the preparation and discussion on how we're going to accomplish the strategies and goals that were set by the board. So we will continue to move forward on that planning, but I do want to impress upon you guys the importance of having every one of you guys there and contributing to that conversation. And then my final thing is to prepare and share SMART goals that I would like to have completed in April of 2026 at my one-year mark. Most of those, I have a lot. I have a lot of goals, and I have a lot of ideas for myself, for the company, and for the staff, as well as for the communities that we serve. But I will pare that down to what should and can be accomplished within the first year. And many of those will be driven by the strategies that you guys put forward in your strategic plan. So that's my first 90 days.
Do we have preliminary dates for that?
Yes, sir. It is August 5th and 6th.
You're still working on the location?
Yes. Becky had permission to get through the retirement party, and then tomorrow she's going to start looking at locations. I have two already in my mind, but we want to make sure that they're available, that we can get catering, that they can handle everything that we need.
Which island is it?
Maui.
One of the things that we discussed is that you guys are busy. And it's not just that we have board members that are working but we have board members that all have responsibilities. And so I'm trying to keep the location within an hour to an hour and a half so that when we release you, you can go home, that we're not spending an entire day traveling there and an entire day traveling back. So it is in the summer, so I did think of heading to northern Utah where it would be cooler and a better place for a retreat, but I think that it's better served for us to stay closer to home and ensure that everybody comes.
Excellent.
That's my vision.
What are your specific action plans as far as improving collaboration and unity or whatever term you use for your management team or staff?
I think, honestly, it's easy for me to say that we have a good working team right now, but I've only met with a couple of them, and so I might have some surprises at next week's meetings. I want us to be very open with the concerns. I think that it is hard for me to judge and honestly assess culture because not everything makes it through my office door. And so I want to have very honest conversations. Anything that is said to me in those meetings will stay completely private, with the caveat that when there are things that come up that need to be addressed, I will likely talk with you guys about some of those. But who told me and exactly what they told me will always remain private. So the first thing is openness and honesty. And then we need to come together as a team and as the supervisor level and say, what do we need to do? What do we do? This is far beyond a pizza party. This is that we need to grow and remember that we are a team and work together as a team. And that is a slow process, but we will get there.
Very good. Other thoughts, ideas, discussion? Now am I on all, Chad?
You are.
Oh, all right. Any public comments?
You're good on the mesquite side.
Any trustee comments?
I'd like to say that we had a very, very nice gathering for Linda's retirement. Thought it was well done. You know, Becky probably was.
Yeah, that was true
to
nice
a lot of the
party.
I think Mendes was really appreciative and touched.
Yeah.
And I think it was such an honor that that many utilities outside of our area showed up. I was just blown away by that.
One of the things that I thought was so impressive, Valley Electric changed their board meeting date so that they could attend the party.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to Robbie, their new CEO, and how much he has a very short tenure working with Mendes. He's only been their CEO since January, but
I'm guessing Michelle had a lot to do with that.
I think that she probably did. Well, she said yes, right? She's the board chair, but also it's Robbie's way of showing NREA how much he cares about being a part of that organization, both honoring Mendes, that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's excellent. Very good. Looking for a motion on approval of next board meeting on May 21st in the Overton boardroom?
Yes, sir.
Three in a row?
Super. Let's keep it going.
This way we stay on our same schedule.
Oh, okay.
that we don't throw off all of the other, there are other, we send that plan out and we just said this month the calendar is changing simply because we have issues that aren't finished in our mesquite office, but we will stay on our regular scheduled meeting.
Okay. And every year we have two in a row in mesquite, so this is a little payback.
Oh, yeah. I never thought of it that way. I like that.
I move that we approve the Wednesday, May 21st board meeting in Overton.
Okay. Second motion. You have a second?
I'll second.
Yeah, I'll second.
You got it? Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Is there an executive session?
No, sir.
Well, hallelujah, brother. Let's adjourn this meeting. Scott, let's do it.
Yeah.
Motion to adjourn.
Oh. Motion to adjourn. I'll make a motion that we adjourn the regular meeting.
Motion in a second. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye.